But the atoms here, in spite of hysteria, it flourishes in Utah as well as Siberia, and whether you're a black, white, red, or brown, the question is this when you boil it down. To be or not to be, that's the question. The answer to it all ain't military atom, like who gets there firstest with the mostest atoms. No, the people of the world must decide their fate. They gotta get together or disintegrate. A whole list truth to be self-evident that all men may be cremated equal.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Paul Carroll, the Program Director at the Plowshares Fund, which works on disarmament issues and eliminating nuclear weapons worldwide. He's responsible for managing the grant making at Plowshares and ensuring that resources are directed towards the smartest people with the best ideas for reducing the risks of nuclear weapons and reducing conflict. Previously, he worked at the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment, the United States Department of Energy, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paul Carroll.
Thank you, Ian. I'm happy to be here.
And Secretary of State John Kerry visited South Korea, then China, and then Japan, where in Japan he said that he called on North Korea to join a regional dialogue. At the same time, he warned North Korea at risk further isolation if its threats continued. So for the longest time, we have been matching North Korean threats with our own sort of pride and bluster that we're not going to be pushed around by this pipsqueak, which sending over B-2 bombers and having this military exercise. And a lot of people, including myself, have been quite concerned that, the U.S. is sort of, you know, in its own sort of superpower bubble, has been blundering into a possible war, which would be catastrophic. So we're still sending mixed signals. On the one hand, we wanted dialogue, but at the same time, warning them not to keep threatening. Do you think the worst is over? Because there's a lot of concern that today in North Korea, which is tomorrow here in the United States, the 15th of April is the 101st anniversary of the birth of the founder of North Korea, Kim Il-sung, and there's an expectation that something may happen on this day.
Now, you hit a couple of critical points. I think that Secretary of State Kerry's visit is actually a very good development for a couple of reasons. It's obviously our top diplomat, and having a top diplomat in the region as opposed to a military chief or a Department of Defense, even civilian leader, sends a very different message. Even though his words were mixed with the line we've heard again and again, you face continued isolation and ostracization, the invitation to come back to a regional dialogue is significant. It's the first time, really, in weeks that we've seen any beam of daylight suggesting that we have dialogue and discussion with the North. I think the what's important to keep in mind with respect to the B-2 and B-52 flights and the F-22 flights, I agree with you. I think it was over the top or not. It was more than we needed to do to send a message to the North, but it was also as much, if not more, about reinforcing our alliance with the South, with their newly elected president, President Park, and basically reminding them, although perhaps with a bright yellow highlighter and underline, that, hey, you're still our ally, we've got your back. I think that message probably was sent a bit too strongly, because sending B-2s up the peninsula and dropping Mach bombs, I think, did exacerbate the situation. What you said about the possibility, though, of a catastrophic war, I think that's really what's at risk, because in this kind of an environment, when you've actually got men and materiel moving around, and you've got this rhetoric at a pitch that we've not seen really for 30 or 40 years, the risk of an accident or a miscalculation or an errant gunshot or even short-range artillery shell shot, that's the kind of thing that we've seen in past history leads to war, not by intention, but by accident.
And, of course, all of the those measures that would reduce accident and miscalculation, such as the hotline, that's been withdrawn. The people that traveled every day into the north, into the Kaesong Industrial Park, they've been withdrawn. And I talked to a former CIA officer the other day, Bob Baer, who's been talking to people in the agency. They're quite concerned about a miscalculation. And one of the reasons that they're concerned is apparently that the United States depends, and its military depends enormously on signal intercepts, particularly in Afghanistan. The Taliban spend most of their time on cell phones and on radios. But in North Korea, it's completely dark. They don't use anything that we could monitor, and they're in tunnels. They use landlines, and if anything happened, it could happen right out of the blue. There would be no warning. So, what's the situation today on this huge holiday in North Korea, which is the combination of the 4th of July, Christmas, and New Year's all rolled into one, the birthday of, I think it's called the Day of the Sun, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I think I read a story, and if it's to be believed, several days back that I thought was really striking. It was a description of how the United States and South Korea had actually gone a step further this time around. This annual military exercise, it's called Full Eagle this year, that they actually had sat down and drawn out very precise plans about what they would do jointly to respond to a North Korean provocation, and actually an actual attack of some kind, like the shelling of Yongpyeong Islands in 2010 and the sinking of the corvette Chenon in 2010. And on the one hand, I think that's a good thing, because if you can be very very clear with one another that, hey, we will respond, but we're going to be measured and we're going to be in concert, you minimize the risk of things spiraling out of control. On the other hand, it again feeds into this cycle. You know, the North Koreans read our press. They know as well as we do how our governments, how our militaries work. And it again amplifies this idea that, hey, you know, we're not going to take anything that you send our way sitting down. Not that we should, but again, rather than have that message sent out, why not have some type of a channel of communication, some type of an off-ramp for the North? I was listening to your show and guests, and they talk about how, you know, perhaps Kim Jong-un has talked himself into a corner. Well, that's a very real possibility. It's really incumbent upon the South, the United States, and frankly China, to offer an off-ramp for the North where they can, with some kind of saving face, walk back from this situation.
Again, I'm speaking with Paul Carroll, the program director at the Plowshares Fund, which works on disarmament issues and eliminating nuclear weapons worldwide. Now, China, though, I'm just wondering whether, of course, John Kerry, was Secretary of State, was in China on Saturday, and the new Chinese leader has sent signals that he may be irritated with the North Koreans. But my sense, Paul Carroll, is that the Chinese are actually pretty comfortable in a way with North Korea, because it sort of throws South Korea and Japan off balance. And, you know, even though they're not necessarily in a military competition, they're certainly in an economic competition, Japan, South Korea, and China, for global markets and in manufacturing. So I'm wondering if that's a part of it. And on our side, we have the ubiquitous military-industrial complex that needs an enemy. They lost the Soviet enemy. The terrorism, a few guys living in caves, the Bin Laden and company, don't really make it as enemies on the scale of the Soviet Union. And the best we've got now is this weird little aggressive but very weak tyranny, or tyranny of the weak, as one author has written about North Korea. I bring that up because clearly this leak coming from the Defense Intelligence Agency via the Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee was so flagrantly designed to make North Korea look more dangerous than it is, that they've really got a weapon that they can stick on a ballistic missile. And it was just the one page of a minority report that was leaked to the public. I mean, that's pretty flagrant, but not surprising.
Well, yeah, you've raised a couple of issues. Let me start with China. You're absolutely right. This is where the complexity of Northeast Asia and the different geostrategic relationships come into play. I think it's fair to say that China, is certainly the strongest ally, is probably too strong a word, but the strongest sponsor of North Korea. They're not exactly best friends, though. They're sort of codependent in a way. It's convenient for China to have a bit of a buffer between itself and South Korea and Japan. It's a sort of a flank, if you will, that North Korea's presence keeps them, they don't have to worry about it so much. And it's critical to understand one thing, however, that the United States has for years now looked at North Korea almost exclusively through the nuclear lens. And that is to say, it's been about the proliferation or possibility of the proliferation of nuclear weapons. China looks at North Korea very differently. They have a higher threshold for pain, if you will, from the North's nuclear shenanigans. What they really fear, their number one priority with North Korea is stability, like with all things. They're like Wall Street bankers. They don't like uncertainty. They don't like the chance of things tumbling. And so if there's any kind of an implosion in North Korea, any kind of a regime change, a cathartic change, you're looking at a 23 million population, much of which will spill over the Chinese border, and they've got a refugee crisis on their hands. The Chinese don't want that. So what really has to happen in the medium and long run is for Beijing and Washington to begin to get on the same page and say, you know what, we have different number one priorities, but there is a lot of common ground here. Let's talk about what that common ground is and come to some, arrangement about how to approach North Korea. You know, with respect to the DIA report, I wouldn't say, I can't really say with any confidence whether it was leaked or meant to stir things up, but it's old news. It's actually not much different than a DIA analysis from years back. And I think it's actually irresponsible to have that aired in a congressional hearing and make it seem as though North Korean nuclear missile capability is anything greater than what most of the rest of the intelligence community says. I agree with you on that point, that it's not helpful. I might even go so far as to say the people that benefit from that are Boeing and Lockheed Martin, who have missile defense contracts.
So just in closing then, Paul Carroll, at this point I haven't seen anything on the wires that indicate any missile launch or any provocative act. Is it possible that in trying to get out of this, something will happen, like the torpedoing a ship, something that with less fingerprints will happen in the final analysis?
Well, I think it could be even better than that. Let's not forget that Kim Jong-un and his apparatus, they can tell the North Korean population anything they want. So that's, in this case, actually useful for us because they can write a script that says something like, we stood up to the outside imperialists, we faced them down. It may end with a whimper, which would be fantastic. It may end with perhaps a diplomatic meeting where our military exercises end and we leave the area, and North Korea says, see that? Because of our strong stance, we sent them packing. We have much less to lose than the North. And I think what needs to happen in the United States sort of domestic and political scene is to recognize that to discuss and go into dialogue with North Korea, it isn't weakness. It's not caving into tyranny. It's about keeping your eye on the ball for the long gain. And if you keep your eye on the ball for the long gain, you have to hold your nose a bit in the near term, but the option, the alternative is far worse.
Yeah, the alternative being the death of millions of people and the destruction of much of South Korea. I would think that in the world of adults, being responsible as opposed to being rhetorical is a much better course of action. And anyway, I don't need to preach here, but I thank you for joining us, Paul Carroll.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Paul Carroll, who's the program director at the Plowshares Fund, which works on disarmament issues and eliminating nuclear weapons worldwide. He's responsible for managing the grant making at Plowshares and ensuring that resources are directed towards the smartest people with the best ideas for reducing the risks of nuclear weapons and reducing conflict. Previously worked at the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment, the U.S. Department of Energy, and the United States Environmental Protection Agency. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.